Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Today, we're talking about sleep and where sleep stands in relation to COVID. And we've been kind of profiling sleep as a segment of the industry because it is a micro part of the HME industry that has really helped kind of define the whole macro. And that especially holds true when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of lessons have been learned, and those are lessons that have been felt throughout the HME industry. And here to talk about where things are now that we're kind of hitting a point where we've got more vaccinations, and it looks like we might be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel, is Gary Sheehan. He's talked to us before about this. Gary's the CEO of Spiro Health, which is a respiratory holding company servicing patients in 8 states and DC. And Gary's a member of our editorial advisory board as well. Gary, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, David. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. Super generous your time. Okay, so let's dive in. And, as I mentioned, you've met with us a few times to talk about sleep therapy. And you've been kind of our touchstone to gauge how the market's been doing under COVID-19. We checked in at the outset of the pandemic. We checked in when things were probably getting towards their worst. And now it looks like we're turning a corner. We've got more vaccines. So I'm curious, how are you feeling right now? Do you feel like sleep therapy is turning a corner?
I do. I mean, we saw a rebounding in the fall, and then that was somewhat muted by the spike in cases, through the holiday season into the new year. I think we're again now starting to see rebounding of volume, and patients are seeking care and diagnoses for sleep-related conditions, and that's an important first step for us to see a recovery in volume for patients then seeking therapy, which is where we come into the picture. So, pleased to see it, and hopefully as we head into spring and vaccinations continue to accelerate in less at-risk populations, we will again continue to see some recovery, if not sort of a bolus, perhaps above trend line as folks who went without, diagnoses for extended periods, are able to access, diagnostic solutions and then again flow into therapy with us.
Got it. Yeah, I like the I like the wordplay there. It's very true. There is kind of you're starting to see that bolus form in the marketplace. So do you think that kind of is true for the other segments of Spiro's business, more the respiratory side, or perhaps some of the providers that are part of Spiro do other stuff? And maybe I'm wondering if, as we've been saying, if this micro is helping illustrate or portray the macro, do you think we're seeing more patients come back into HME as a whole?
Well, I think, there's certain pieces of our business that we're operating, at normal levels, if not, somewhat significantly above normal levels. If you think about home oxygen as a real means to bridge patients from, the acute environment and into a COVID recovery in the home, home ventilation solutions that were deployed, especially at the beginning, into acute care settings to assist with integrated healthcare systems response to the recovery overall. So I think HME broadly played a significant and substantial role in combating the COVID-19 pandemic, in serving as sort of a relief valve for integrated healthcare systems, if you will, to get more patients out of that more acute setting into the home and into more of a stable resting and recovery environment. So the other piece of our business is a orthopedic bracing business that it runs through a lot of emergency departments that has continued to struggle as folks, I think safe to say, sprains and strains, you're kind of avoiding the acute care environment as much as possible. So, maybe you're kind of resting and icing something that otherwise during a pre-pandemic sort of timeline, you would have been seeking active treatment for. So, various kind of puts and takes across the product categories. But overall, really happy with, the response that our team members provided throughout the pandemic, but more broadly, kind of the HME sector overall, I think did really critical and significant work throughout COVID-19 that I think is starting to reshape and reset the healthcare system at large's view of what we do and how we do it and how it serves, you know, the value it provides and serves across the healthcare continuum overall.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a really interesting point, Gary, and not to get too far off on a tangent, but when it comes to the respiratory side, we really even saw some acute care happening in the home setting, right? Like they were like, okay, we don't want this person in the hospital setting, but they need supplementary oxygen. Let's put them on a concentrator in the home, free up some beds and see how the patient progresses. That was one of the approaches, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, look, the whole hospital at home movement has been sort of plodding along for a number of years now. And as many, you know, technologists and strategists have said, you know, COVID ultimately pulled forward a lot of trends and accelerated a lot of trends that were already happening in the marketplace. That goes for healthcare and beyond. So the idea that you could deliver more acute care in a home environment where, you know, safety became really safety and capacity became paramount issues in a way that they never had historically, I think is absolutely part of the response. And I think, as I've said, you know, many times recently, if you think about the future of the U.S. healthcare system being value-based connected care in the home, which I think it is, the HME sector really is the last mile infrastructure needed to provide for that future healthcare system design. And I think that's been proven out over the last 12, 13 months through the pandemic, and will continue on from here as more decision makers from across healthcare have seen, you know, what companies like ours can do and our peers, the folks listening today, and get excited about deploying new solutions that are patient preferred, lower cost, and ultimately safer and more conducive to recovery and management of chronic conditions in the home.
Love it. Okay. Now, let's get back to sleep. How would you describe where the sleep therapy market is, where sleep therapy providers are at present in regard to COVID-19? And I think you alluded to this earlier. People are starting to come back. Is that how you'd characterize it?
Yeah, I think it's very local in nature. All healthcare is local at the end of the day. So particularly now, it depends where you are. What are the state's restrictions that are in place? What are the caseload volumes that are in place? What's the status of, you know, we are, you know, at the whim essentially of the diagnostic channel. So to the extent the diagnostic channel is up and functioning and humming, you know, you're probably doing really well. In other areas where it's not, or it's just sort of reopening, there's going to be a little bit of a lag effect. So I think on balance, what I've heard is call it 85% of pre-pandemic levels. Could be a little bit higher in certain places, a little bit lower in others. But I think you're kind of in a mid-80s to 90% in terms of pre-pandemic volume, and that will continue to restore and recover. And again, could be some above market volume as things reopen and patients who delayed or deferred diagnoses go ahead and enter in and receive those diagnoses.
There you go. So, and is that, let me take a step back. Is that getting back to that word? I just love that you use the word bolus in terms of the, this market demand. Do you think that the market demand might, this bolus might overwhelm sleep providers in some cases, or do you think everybody's ready for it?
I think providers are ready. You know, in a market where it's more controlled by lab-based testing, you know, there's a real capacity issue, right? So there's only so many beds, and to the extent that folks have not adopted HST as a more patient-preferred, scalable method of diagnoses, there's going to be some constriction. But certainly, I think the HME market is ready, willing, and able to scale aggressively as patients have, you know, ultimately what is needed from a diagnostic point of view and a coverage point of view, right? It's one thing to have an HST, you know, getting the accompanying documents and prescriptions that are required to bill insurance, it can be another matter altogether. So I do think that they, you know, look, if volume was down in the 50 to 60% of normal range for a protracted period, that's not because you know, America all of a sudden went on a diet, lost weight, and, you know, there's a lower incidence of sleep apnea. It's just because people weren't being diagnosed. So there's going to have to be some period of time where there's a higher than historic level of folks being diagnosed and then ultimately treated.
Got it. I'm curious, thinking about that, you mentioned home sleep testing. Do you think that in today's environment, people will be more open to doing that? You know, we just recently ran a study saying that, you know, people's opinions are, you know, it had a lot of findings, but I think if I were to paraphrase the results, I think it's fair to say that patients had mixed feelings towards HST and wearable sleep devices and things like that. As a provider, what's your take? Do you think people are warming to it or no?
Yeah, I think I think people are warming to anything and everything that involves healthcare in the home. Mm-hmm. Whether that's diagnostic care or that's actual therapy. And that goes for things that HME is involved with and not telehealth, obviously. You know, I'm not turning over any sort of revelatory rocks here, but telehealth is having a moment in the sun, and telehealth really is the front end of need for HME, meaning that's where you're going to sort of pick up on the fact that something is off in a patient's life and perhaps a test should be ordered. And then that test can be interpreted remotely. And then another, you know, behind it can come another telehealth consult visit to satisfy payer requirements. So I think that anything relating to healthcare in the home is, you know, having a moment in the sun, and frankly, one that's long overdue. I mean, this method of diagnosing and treating patients is just so far and away the most logical way that the healthcare system should be designed. We should not be pushing patients in to acute care campuses to receive, you know, diagnoses for things that are very easily managed remotely. It's not an appropriate in terms of, you know, utilization of capital or the time that it takes, you know, patients to travel and do what is necessary, park and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think absolutely it's happening and it should happen, and it's long overdue. Just pulling forward a trend that probably should have kicked off a decade ago.
Now, we talked about the COVID learning curve the last time we spoke and kind of the key lessons that HME providers learned during the pandemic. In talking about this trend towards more healthcare in the home, even, you know, and diagnostic in the home, and even some acute care in the home, like you said, the hospital in the home, what have been the key lessons that your business and maybe, you know, sleep providers as a whole have learned? And what do you think are going to be the lessons that are going to stick for good, given that context that you just described?
I think the first and biggest one is really, it was never about the technological limitations, right? The underpinnings for this movement to delivering more care in the home have been there, ready, and sufficient for probably more than a decade. It was always just this, you know, willingness, capability for the system to then adapt itself to configure itself around more of a home-based care environment. So when we couldn't be near each other, that forced the hand, and everybody was then forced to use the tools that were around them and have been around them for a while. And for many of us, we found the care delivery to be virtually seamless. So, you know, that's speaks to the difficulty. You know, change is hard in every industry. I think harder still in healthcare because of the myriad regulations and different constituencies that influence policy within healthcare delivery, be it, you know, actual providers of care. Then you've got the payers and the government and all these different people that have a stake in how things are done, I think does prevent at times innovation. So that's the biggest lesson, and I think we'll have to see the willingness of the various market participants, be it patients, payers, referral partners, to continue to have more of a home-based care environment once the pandemic has passed is TBD. I mean, there's a lot of people that benefit from a system wherein patients are reporting to a central campus where, frankly, sometimes things are billed at a higher rate and there's more of a captive referral capability there. So, you know, again, we'll see as we re-enter the world, but certainly, you know, the limitation there was no limitation around the technology. It was really a limitation around people's ability and willingness to change. And that goes for patients as well as payers and referral partners.
Got it. And it sounds to me like there's a will among, you know, maybe you mentioned these, you know, sort of closed loop dynamics where people are, you know, that there's going to be an impetus for some people to try and get patients back into these closed loops or, you know, semi-closed loops so that they can drive increased reimbursement. But what about the patients? It seems to me the will of, and maybe I'm just speaking from my own perspective, but it seems to me that the will among the patients is to be more in a home yep. setting if they could do it. Or am I wrong? What's your sense?
I think you're absolutely right. I do think there's going to be a friction, right, as a mandate comes down from, you know, leadership in an integrated healthcare system to drive more care back to campus, if you will, just to, you know, make up a term, right? Someone like you, or frankly myself, might be very resistant when my physician tells me, you know, you need to come here to do this or to do that. Whereas, you know, other people, frankly, you know, maybe older people, the Medicare patient population might be more willing to just listen to what their doctor tells them to do. So, mm-hmm. there's going to be a curious sort of friction between what is patient preferred, what is most cost beneficial for the system at large, what is patient preferred, and then what is actually delivered, right? So it's going to be open, you know, what healthcare delivery ultimately looks like, and much of a choice to someone like you or I have, or is our, you know, are we part of a network through our, you know, primary care provider that really kind of locks us down and limits our access to telehealth and home-based healthcare solutions? That's all TBD. And I think a story that we'll bear watching very closely through the end of 2021.
Now, and we kind of led to this, I think, a little bit, and that was talking about, you know, the differing opinions among patients, you know, that we might see a difference between Medicare patients and what they want versus other patients who are more willing to tell the healthcare system what it is they want, and that being, you know, more care in the home setting, leveraging technology. Do you see the same thing with referral partners? Do you think there's some who go, oh yeah, I want more in the home versus I want more people coming into the office? What's your take from the referral community?
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be all over the map because I think, you know, one person's inefficiency in healthcare is another's revenue stream, right? So to the extent that, you know, they're levered to higher reimbursement through in-person visits versus telehealth, they're going to vote with their pocketbook potentially and promote, you know, returning to the office as the only sole means to interface with them to provide care. I think the more innovative, frankly, honest providers across healthcare are going to ultimately land on a hybrid model. There are clearly situations that warrant in-person visits and you know, they need to continue. But what you can do is layer in additional touch points on a remote basis. And I think this gets to the real future of healthcare delivery is if there are cloud connected devices in a patient's heart flowing into a clinical decision maker's inbox, if you will, that allows for, I think, the real true future design of healthcare delivery when your care provider interfaces with you when it is needed, not on some arbitrary basis, an annual physical. Why do we have an, it's just once a year. That's the way we do it. Well, what if we had actual data, your blood pressure, around your pulse oximetry, around your weight, around other sort of easily determined clinical markers that flowed into a repository and sort of threw off red flags? Hey, you know, something's going on here with Gary, and I know he's not due for a physical for 6 months, but if we don't intervene a little bit more quickly than that, I think we're heading to a larger problem that's going to lead to more of an acute event, a higher cost intervention. So I think there again, you know, how do you install and build that environment of connected healthcare devices in the home? You do it through HME. I see another way to do it effectively at scale. So I think that it's going to be a hybrid. It's going to involve more cloud connected devices in the home. And it's going to involve, to some degree, sort of AI machine learning to say, you know, these two things are up and this one's down. That's a problem. And this is something where we now need to involve a clinician through a telehealth appointment to understand what is happening, and then potentially schedule to bring that person in out of schedule, out of this arbitrary annual schedule, because something, we think there's an adverse event coming more quickly than that.
Yeah. And it's also interesting because I think about all the preventative healthcare data that's being collected that never goes anywhere into the healthcare infrastructure. Like,
right.
You know, I'm supposed to manage my cholesterol, I'm supposed to be on a high fiber diet. So I really use like apps like MyFitnessPal to track my nutrition. And that's literally a metric that I check like morning, noon, and night to make sure that I'm keeping my blood clean, right? And but my physician has no way of knowing that besides me just relating it to her. But right. what if that data were collected, you know, all that data, you know, diet, sleep, exercise, you know, if there was some way patients could be sharing that, and there was a dashboard in the same way that sleep providers monitor people's sleep habits, if they could monitor that entire spectrum, you know, what that would do for sleep care or other forms of care, respiratory, whatever,
absolutely.
On down the line.
No. Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, if there's multiple/many points of data and health information flowing into a central repository that can then sort of stack rank the criticality of any one data point, right? And weight, create some sort of weighted average of David's health score and say, you know, we're going to look at some of his diet information, some tangible information around weight, blood pressure, cholesterol, sleep data, you know, it's, the list goes on, and then fire off alerts and warnings to the clinical environment as needed. That's not an easy strategy to execute, but I think that is what the future of healthcare can and should, you know, look like. And you know, we need to figure out as HME, as an industry, you know, how do we play into that environment and support that environment, and what are the constituencies we're going to be partnering with in terms of technology companies, clinicians, et cetera, to, you know, build that future for the U.S. healthcare system.
Got it. Okay. So let's get to the last question here. Taking all these points that we've talked about, you know, the changes in how care is being provisioned, and how sleep therapy's been provisioned, the fact that we're seeing more patients return now that, you know, they're not kind of spooked by the disease, the fact that we're turning a corner with the disease and all that. How, you know, what advice do you have for your fellow sleep providers as they kind of look at the next 6 to 8 months? And what's your sort of advice for your fellow, you know, much more broadly, HME providers? You know, what if you had to rev up the crystal ball, you know, what would you say to them?
I would say keep doing what you're doing. The response from the HME community to the U.S. healthcare system over the past 12 months, I think, has been heroic. We've had, you know, number of national companies report on the number of COVID lives that they touch directly, and it's very impressive. So you are sending, you know, technicians and clinicians and therapists into, you know, known positive COVID environments to provide relief for a healthcare system that was, you know, extraordinarily strained in its response to this pandemic. And I think that the HME community responded amazingly. And I think I would say that we need to continue to stand up and tell that story, because I don't think it's well reflected in how we're reimbursed today. And we need to continue to execute on that high level of service and partnership to the U.S. healthcare system at large, be that patients, be that referral partners, be that payers, be that government agencies, et cetera. Keep getting out there. And again, I kind of put, as I sit as a vice chair of AA Home Care, I put that hat on and say that we really need to celebrate the response the HME community brought to this pandemic, understand how that fits in the design of the healthcare, you know, system of the future, and make sure that, you know, we are appropriately considered and frankly reimbursed in that future, because that becomes a key to ensuring that we don't see the continued waves of bankruptcies and foreclosures that we've seen across the sector in the last 10 years, when, you know, Medicare frankly treated us as equipment jockeys. And that's not what we are. We're clinically driven organizations that provide connected healthcare in the home and unlock a tremendous amount of value for the U.S. healthcare system, and I think are a key instrument and tool that the U.S. healthcare system needs to use for this future of value-based, cloud-connected healthcare in the home. Right? That is who we are. That is what we do. And I think we need to stand up and be proud of that fact. And frankly, not my organization as much. I won't claim it, but I think as an industry, kind of pat ourselves on the back for the work that we did throughout this pandemic in the harm's way that many of our people put themselves in to, you know, help the United States deal with what was a, you know, kind of a questionable response to a global pandemic.
Gary, if this conversation were taking place on Twitter, I would be posting a quote unquote this gift.
Gift. Yeah. Well, we'll do it after when this posts, we can go there and do it. It's always fun.
There you go. Well, Gary, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, David. Appreciate you reaching out. It was a good time.
Thanks very much to Gary Sheehan, the CEO of Spiro Health, and also a member of our editorial advisory board, and also a vice chair over at AA Home Care. Gary's hyper involved. So thank you, Gary. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry and with our publication, make sure to go over to hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so, make sure to subscribe to the print or digital version of our magazine there as well. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us more on social media. We're at HME Business on both Facebook and Twitter. And I'm at Post Acute News on Twitter. We're also on LinkedIn as well now. So you can find us there if you prefer LinkedIn. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me via Twitter. Again, at Post Acute News, or you can hit me up via email at DKOP as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105 Media. Thank you all very much for listening. We'll keep covering compelling topics like sleep, COVID-19, and HME as a whole. But for now, goodbye until our next HMEB podcast.